And this is your host, Marty, for Marty on Mondays on 1490 WWPR. And if you're interested in joining in, 1-888-761-1490 or locally 745-1490. And I'd like to introduce my guest, Angela Fischetti. Angela?
Yes, good morning, Marty. How are you?
Good.
Good, glad to hear it.
Yes, let's talk about, you know, your yoga.
Okay.
To start off, you're into Kirtan. Kirtan.
Kirtan and also devotional singing. And Kirtan literally means chanting the many names of God. And for me, it can be done in any language whatsoever, as long as it is something that is prayerful and uplifting. And a lot of my work is somewhat Kirtan influenced, but mostly what I call devotional concert, because I do all styles of songs that I feel are inspiring and all about, you know, what is positive in life. And it could be Harold Arlen, it could be Irving Berlin or Stephen Sondheim, but then again, it could also be mantra and chants from Sanskrit.
Your background is interesting. You went to the Stella Adler Academy?
Yes, the Stella Adler Acting Conservatory, correct. Many, many years ago.
What'd you major in there?
Well, it was acting, and that's it. That's what the studio provided, any form of theatrical training was what that was all about. And I worked with her directly for 3 years, and it was an amazing experience as participating with her and sharing the experience of teaching with her actually influenced me as a teacher, as I've been an instructor for about 19 years, and my work was unbelievably inspired by her from a teaching perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting that in your press kit, you talked about that you were inspired by Judy Garland.
Yes, absolutely. My great love and great mentor in my life as a singer.
And this is your first album that you recorded?
Yes, it is. It's Angela Fischetti, Enter the Light. And I recorded it after 26 years of not singing a note. And I met a beautiful young man by the name of Arrow. And he was my vocal coach for a little while. And then we hit it off from a philosophical perspective. I told him my idea for an album, and he wanted to produce it. And so he did, and he recorded it also.
Did you sing when you were small?
Yes. When I was a child, I started singing lessons at 10 years old. And I sang all throughout the remainder of grammar school into junior high and senior high. And then I stopped at 19 years old.
What kind of things did you do in grammar and junior high school and high school?
Well, I just did anything and everything to try to imitate Liza Minnelli, Judy Garland's daughter.
Oh, okay.
And she was quite the happening thing at the time, what with Cabaret and Liza with a Z and all that. And so anything that she sang, I sang. And then some various musicals we did in high school, Fiddler on the Roof, Gypsy, Cabaret, and we did lots of concerts, and we did a lot of what I call karma yoga, which is basically volunteer work where we would go sing in different assisted living facilities for seniors, etc. And it was almost always a Liza Minnelli song or a Judy Garland song.
And did you ever sing in church?
No, I have not. And I am very interested in getting involved with church singing and choir singing also, as another branch off of devotional singing.
How'd you find out about yoga? What got you into yoga?
Well, I had been a personal trainer for many, many, many years. I don't know, 15, 16 years, whatever. And I had a beautiful, beautiful association with a cat. And her name was Honey Bunny. And she was in my life for over 20 years. She lived with me. And when she passed away, I just, the next day, literally, I woke up and said, I'm really tired of this cut bicep tricep routine, and there's got to be something a little bit deeper and more to life. And that's literally how it happened. And I just started going to take yoga classes. And but me veering off into the teaching aspect happened, you know, several years later.
And what'd you do in between time? Did you sing professionally?
I did up until 19, and then I stopped. I literally didn't sing another note until 26 years later, until I was 45. And the reason for me returning to singing had to do with, it was kind of like a double whammy. My father passed away, and then actually the sequence was that there was 9/11.
Yes.
And I knew over 300 people who perished that day.
Yee.
Right. And then my dad passed on a few months later, and I had just moved down to Miami Beach, to South Beach, and I couldn't handle all the grief. And that's how I kind of refound my original passion of singing. But at the same time, I was in teacher training for to become a yoga instructor. And part of what I was introduced to was something called bhakti yoga. And this is devotional, again, chanting, singing devotional prayer. And that so resonated within me, and it gave me an avenue for my grief. And that's literally why I went back into singing, but chose that avenue and still basically pursue that avenue, you know, these, like, 2 years later.
Well, at least it's not too late to manifest dreams.
That's right.
If you wanted
to
sing.
Oh, I'm here to tell you, dreams come true. Many kinds of dreams. I have been so blessed because ever since I refound my original passion, the world has opened up to me.
Have you ever heard of Marianne Williamson?
Yes, I have. The Course of Miracles.
Yeah, she's great and powerful.
Yes, yes.
And have you ever read the Celestine Prophecies?
Many years ago.
James Redfield?
Yes, but like so many years ago when it first came out.
Because that's another powerful book.
Yeah.
What's the inspiration behind the opening invocation?
Well, I try to lay out the album thinking in terms of one of my concerts. How would I present a concert thematically? Through mostly chants, and there's an African song in there and a little bit of English too. So by opening invocation, in my head what I'm thinking is basically I'm calling upon different names of aspects, of different aspects of God, and different names of different, you know, different gods and goddesses, and basically calling upon them to come on in and join us as we're here together in song and in prayer at the same time, and allow us to all be very uplifting together, sharing in the spirit of the moment.
And if you're interested in joining in, 754-1490 locally, toll free 1-888-761-1490. And also this show is broadcasting live on the internet. If you'd like to listen to, and you are invited to join in, would you like to play another song?
You're asking me?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Which
like
one
right
would
in.
You like me to play?
Well, why don't we play Enter the Light, the track title?
Okay.
Because that is basically what the album, how it came to be, was from that moment that I knew my father passed, and also Judy Garland is involved as the muse for that song. So, yes, I think that would be appropriate.
Okay. Yeah, the Enter the Light was pretty good.
Well, actually, Marty, that song wasn't Enter the Light. That one is...
Oh.
That's okay. That one is called Resurrection. And may I just make a little comment about the significance of that? I appreciate it. Resurrection was written by Arrow and Luis Duran, and I think quite beautifully. Basically, Resurrection... for me, was about the rebuilding of New York City and the spirit of New York City and the spirit of Brooklyn after 9/11. And I think they did an excellent job of just going with that imagery. And it was even more profound for me because on my most recent trip in March to New York City, I finally, for the first time since 9/11, I went to Ground Zero and just kind of like paid my respects, so to speak, and the song is just a beautiful representation of that, New York can do it, is doing it, is picking itself up, and I just found it to be very inspiring to be down there at Ground Zero.
Yes, that was very inspirational.
Thank you.
And, you know, when I think about, you know, your one of your other tracts, Enter the Light, a lot of people don't realize that we're all made of sunlight.
I like that imagery. I don't even think of that. I think it's a beautiful imagery.
Because, have you ever heard of Tom Hartman?
I have to say that I have never.
Okay, well, I would like to recommend that you read his book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.
Mm.
And it's a book that deals with a lot of the problems we're facing when we're, you know, when our energy reserves are shrinking. And it talks about that we're all made of sunlight because we need it.
Yeah. Interesting. And that's, you know, that's the imagery behind Enter the Light and heading for the light in that moment of transitioning, so to speak, from here to the other side.
Because you also, it was interesting when you talked about your father entering the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. May I tell the little story as to how the track of Enter the Light came to me? I was starting to tell it a little bit before, but my father had been ill, and I woke very early one morning to this kind of like silver shimmering light. It was still quite dark out, you know, and this light was just, I was following it literally, just literally following it with my eyes around my apartment, and it landed on this photograph I have of Judy Garland, and her arms are stretched out wide, and there's a spotlight on her face, and her head is lifted in song, and she's smiling, and I knew at that precise moment that my father had passed, and this was confirmed probably within less than a minute. I've received a phone call from my mom that he did indeed pass over. So that moment, and the fact that I had a really beautiful closure with my dad, I was able to be in hospital with him and spend nights with him and talk to him about yoga philosophy and transitioning over. And so that really was the inspiration, both the photograph and the experience with my dad and that shimmering light were the inspiration for the track title of Enter the Light.
What number is Enter the Light?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Yeah,
I knew it. I just knew it. Let me go.
Because I was...
I'm going to figure 1 second. And it's the one just before Resurrection. Do you have the album in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, if you pull out that front cover insert and open that up.
Yeah, I got the insert.
Okay, it'll show you what number it is. It's just before, let me see here for you. Okay, Angela, Enter the Light, here we go. Let's say that it is number, it's just after Resurrection, it's number 9.
Okay, let me put it...
Because on the back cover, there's a little error on my back cover of my album, because Resurrection isn't listed. But in the inside front cover insert, it's correct. So it would be just before the last song, Enter the Light, is number 9, the second to last song.
Okay, I'll...
Let's give it a shot and see what happens.
Let's just give it a shot.
Okay.
Niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, samadhi, samadhi. Thank you.
That was the right one.
Oh, it sure was.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very lovely song, Enter the Light.
Thank you very much.
And I would also like to announce that if you'd like to be a guest on the show, call 745-1490. We also are looking for sponsors for the show. You know, if you have a business or you want to get rid of something, radio is an excellent way of promoting your business. And if you'd like to be a guest, call also 745-1490. And also, if you'd like to join in on the conversation, 745-1490. And also toll free, 1-888-761-1490. And we're back with Angela Fischetti. Yeah, that was a great song, Enter the Light.
Thank you very, very much.
Because, yeah, as I said before, we're all made of light, mm-hmm. whether people want to believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a lot of the Western religions, there seems to be a denial that about sun worshiping. Because sometimes when I think about it, it made sense for a lot of people to worship the sun, because the sun is the final determinator of life and death.
Right.
Because we all need, all of life needs sunlight, or if we don't have it, we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's a lot better to be in the light.
Yes.
And to enter it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with yoga, how many years have you been into yoga?
I had been into yoga many, many years ago, and then went off into the direction of fitness, and then I got back into it 6 years ago.
And with Kirtan yoga?
It's okay, Kirtan. Kirtan would be that musical gathering of people chanting the different names of God. Bhakti yoga is a yoga of devotion through chanting.
Have you ever heard of Hatha yoga?
Hatha yoga, sure. Literally means sun, moon.
Because a lot of people consider yoga a religion, and also there are a lot of people that consider the martial arts a religion, and I don't really totally believe that, because there is spiritual growth you get from yoga and the martial arts.
Well, I mean, for some folks, yoga is a religion. You know, there's many, many different components to yoga, not just the physical practice, the postures, asana, you know. As I mentioned before, bhakti yoga is a form of yoga. There's a form of yoga that has to do with the study of the philosophy of yoga. You know, the list goes on. So for some folks, it is a religion, but from a general perspective of my personal experience, teaching the physical practice of yoga has to do with certainly a fitness component, but also how one can translate how to apply the discipline of yoga from the yoga mat to life. So in yoga, the physical practice, how I teach it is to remain present in the moment, in the detail of the posture. So I'll go really deep into the detail, and part of this has to do so the mind keeps from wandering on, you know, what do I have to do after class today?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what am I going to eat? You know, I got laundry to do, this and that. So all of the detail of the posture keeps us present in the moment, for after all, that's all we've got.
For now,
you know?
Yes, because we don't think about it sometimes. You know, there are times I don't think about the now.
Yeah, sure, because we've got to prepare and do what we're doing for the rest of the day, too.
Have you ever heard of attention deficit disorder?
Oh, I sure have, and I actually teach some children with that. I teach them through the family, meaning I teach private classes to families, and it very much helps children with concentration. Helps them with their studies. I've seen it. I've seen report cards, literally, that have registered one number before these children have started class and register something very different after several months of taking yoga.
Because, you know, with ADD, there are a lot of people that deny its existence, and also we're in a chemically oriented society where we think we can solve problems by taking chemicals.
Right.
Which sometimes for a lot of people makes the problem worse. And some of these chemicals are addictive and they also eat away at your organs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to some degree, I understand if someone needs to be medicated for something.
Oh, yes.
But we're too quick in this country. We're too quick to prescribe as the answer to something.
There's a lot of truth in that. And can disabled people practice yoga?
Oh, absolutely. I work with people with many physical challenges. I have people who are in wheelchairs, advanced case of Parkinson's, cancers, post-cardiac rehab, etc., stroke. There's so many different ways of approaching a yoga class. It doesn't just have to be a vigorous, you know, Ashtanga class or something. I mean, I work with people oftentimes in their bed. To get them to focus. The focus for me is the breath and the movement, coordinating the two. When one coordinates the two, we're in the now.
Because that's what's always emphasized in yoga, is the breath and in a lot of the martial arts.
Right, right, which is why I knew when I met my producer, the producer of my album, Arrow, I knew he'd get me philosophically because he was a martial artist.
And with your, you know, it's interesting that you have healed people through yoga.
I don't know to use that word. I don't know about the use of that word. But what I can tell you is that people help themselves through yoga. because they're the ones. I mean, I might be saying, okay, do this or that or try this, try that. But they're the ones who are committed to doing it. They're the ones who are committed to showing up, whether it be a private session or, you know, a class in a gym or something. They're the ones doing it.
And also, can you do yoga while you're pregnant?
Absolutely. That's another area that I specialize in is prenatal yoga. One certainly needs to discuss this with whoever the medical caregiver is. In most cases, it's an OBGYN. You want to get clearance, but it's absolutely possible. And there's variations at each one of the trimesters that needs to be taken into consideration and applied.
Oh, okay.
But very doable and, frankly, very fun and very, very fulfilling for the mom and me too. I mean, it's a beautiful experience to work with ladies prenatally.
Because does it ever help women that are pregnant, yoga?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it helps from the perspective of preparing the mindset for what I call the marathon of labor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know, so it's really the mindset, the approach. Okay, oh my God, you know, how am I going to handle this when the contraction hits? So if you've been working on some breathing techniques, you've been working on just experiencing the now, and then you've been working on physical postures that prepare the body for the birthing process, those aspects have been known to be helpful. Is it going to make it less painful? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. But it makes it all far more doable and far less frightening.
Yeah, well, at least that's a helpful thing.
Oh, absolutely.
It less frightening for women.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then it makes it the process of postpartum much easier, too.
Yeah, that's something a lot of people sometimes dispute whether that exists or not.
Oh, you're talking about postpartum depression now.
Right.
No, I'm talking about just after giving birth, the whole process of regaining a fitter body and the process of adjusting to, you know, the mom's got to deal now with a baby and being up all night long and all this.
Oh, yes.
So that's what I mean by postpartum. Postpartum depression, well, yoga is directly associated with helping any type of depression. There are postures that we put people into to help with depression.
Because in a lot of ways, when you have a baby, it really takes a lot of the vitamins and minerals out of your system.
I don't know if it actually takes it out of your system.
Well,
but
not
that
totally.
There is such a hormonal change, yes. After the giving birth process and the adjustment back toward the neutralizing of the hormone levels in the body, that process has been known to lead into postpartum depression.
Are you into vitamins and minerals?
Not really. I'm into healthy eating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm into way healthy eating. Yoga practitioner, I'm into, I'm a vegan. I eat no animal product whatsoever.
Do you ever drink Tropicana orange juice?
No, I've got a phenomenal juice bar locally over here. I'll give them a little plug. It's
okay,
called Athens
that's
Juice Bar on Washington Avenue here in South Beach. And, I mean, it's the freshest. I mean, they make everything right there on the spot, including coconut milk. It's just dynamite.
Yeah, because I drink the calcinated orange juice or the little Minute Maid pack because it has calcium in it.
Right.
Because I don't really handle dairy very well.
Well, you might also want to look at your dark green leafy vegetables and dark green vegetables as such. And there are plenty of ways of getting calcium without having to take a supplement, but somebody is diagnosed with osteoporosis, then I'm going to say, yes, I agree, you need to take some calcium supplementation.
Because in a lot of ways, when you really look at this high-tech agriculture, it's really depleting the soil.
Mm.
And sometimes a lot of the food we're eating is dead.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I really don't know if I totally agree with that. I know that that's an argument that's been out there for a long time, but I maintain that it's an argument that's been propagated by the vitamin and mineral companies that want you to purchase their supplements.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, I look at everything from that perspective. I mean, it may very well be, but who's putting those articles out?
Right, because it's just sometimes there's a concern about the micronutrients that you need, that your body needs some of them.
You know, if you take some good, healthy, raw foods and some not too processed cooked foods, and for me, it's just all about no harm done, no harm to animals.
Would you like to play another song?
Sure.
Which one would you like?
Why don't we play? There's a song called Yemaya Asesu, and it is an African song, and it's dedicated to the Afro-Cuban or Afro-Latina goddess Yemaya. And on my album, I actually dedicate it to my dad, as he was an admirer of women and respected us greatly. So I think that is, I think it's track number 4.
Okay, correct? Well, I got it on track 4.
Okay, let's see what happens.
Okay. Yemaya Asesu.
Want a little help?
Yes.
Yemaya Asesu.
Asesu. That sounds like Hebrew or African.
It is African.
What does that mean?
It's just about honoring the goddess Yemaya, that she is Basically, the story of Yamaya is that she is the great mother, protector, fierce in her devotion to her children, but very nourishing, very nurturing. And I had found a painting of her where she is rising up out of the ocean. It's very, very powerful.
Have you ever heard of Angela Bofill?
Yeah.
She has a lot of lovely music, too.
Yeah.
And she's inspired by a lot of the Afro-Cuban.
Oh, thank you for telling me that. I'll go online and pull that up and look into that.
Because I have a lot of her music, too.
Mm.
And what kind of... Did you play any instruments when you were growing up?
Oh, boy, I tried. I was a dismal failure. I attempted some guitar. I attempted some piano. But every time I worked on instruments, I just kept getting pulled back toward, well, I think I'll sing.
Oh, okay.
And I'll go back, you know, and I think I just want to study singing. And so, yes, I have later been... I'm happy to say that several musicians have said to me, but your voice is your instrument. And so I can say, yes, I have studied instrument and continue to do so, by the way, with my singing with an absolutely brilliant singing teacher here in Miami. Her name is Mary Walkley of Florida Sings. In fact, it's floridasings.com, her website. And, the changes in my voice since the making of that album, I cannot wait to make the next album. And we're going to go into the studio, Arrow and myself, next year, 2007, make the album and release it in time for my 50th birthday in 2008. And I'm looking forward to that. But if anybody's looking for a dynamite singing teacher, Mary Walkley is the way to go.
Oh, okay.
And she travels, too, by the way. She travels up to Tampa. She travels... And, teach issues, part of the Broadway Theater Project. But she's extremely respectful of the style of singing. She puts me through my paces. She busts my chops, as she oughta, vocally. And then we apply that into the style of music that I love.
Oh, okay. And also... In Miami, there's a lot of the Cubans that sing a lot of music. What are the instruments in the background of many of your songs?
Oh, there's a lot of tablas, a lot for the percussionals. Arrow and Luis Duran did all that. They played all the instruments. They supplied all of it. But a lot, like with the song Resurrection that you all played, the major instrumentation is tablas.
And you also have Amazing Grace.
Yes. And that is my personal tribute to those souls who I knew who passed on 9/11. The reason that I knew so many people who passed that day is because when I used to work in New York, up in New York, in Brooklyn Heights, in a health club there. It was right across, it was actually on the Brooklyn Promenade side, and you can see the World Trade Center.
Yes.
So we were only one subway stop away, and many of the folks who lived in our area worked at the World Trade Center. Many of the folks who worked in the World Trade Center but did not necessarily live near the health club did come over the one subway stop to work out. So Amazing Grace is my personal tribute to the souls that departed and also to Brooklyn. I was so proud of how Brooklyn behaved during that whole time period because we're such an eclectic area to live in with all these different types of ethnicity. he's, you know, living together.
Well, Miami's like that.
Yes, it is.
Miami Beach, you have Jewish people, people from the islands.
Oh, it's, yeah, and that, actually, it's one of the reasons why I moved here, because I was moving from Park Slope, Brooklyn, which was so eclectic and so varied, and I needed to have somewhat of that same thing. You know, I could not live in an area that just is one, whatever,
yes,
you know.
And also there are people from India there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel quite at home.
you have the world in Miami Beach.
Well, you know, I mean, that is what the world is, isn't it?
Yes.
Really what the whole world is. It's just a conglomeration of a whole bunch of us just trying to do the right thing. And sometimes we go astray. So the moment of going astray, like in 9/11, I was propelled to and had a compulsion to do something positive around that whole scene, and thus that's how Amazing Grace came to be.
Well, there are a lot of people who are using this incident for a lot of negative things.
Right.
You know,
right.
Taking away freedom, vilifying right. Muslims, you know, vilifying a lot of other things that sometimes had really nothing to do.
Well, that's why I was so proud of Brooklyn, Marty, because you know, this particular area of Brooklyn I lived in, there are a lot of mosques and temples and churches and just all kinds of wonderful things that represent different aspects of many different types of gods, yeah? In essence, it's really all one. And boy, did everybody just pull together instead of, you know, bashing each other. It was a 9/11 sparked a rising of just getting together and getting on with life in a positive fashion. And so I was very, very proud of Brooklyn.
Yeah. What are your feelings about this war we're having in Iraq?
Well,
yeah, if you don't want to get too much into it, I can understand that.
I don't want to get too much into it, but I will say I did not vote for this president. And I will leave it at that.
Well, I didn't vote for him either. The only thing I was happy about was that they did get Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hope they get bin Laden, too. Because I think people such as bin Laden, I think, do a lot more damage to religion than atheism has ever done.
Mm. I don't think it has anything to do with religion. My point is none of this has to do with anything to do with religion. They'll speak about it having to do with religion, but it's just pure case of politics and trying to make you believe what I believe.
Yeah, well, they also blame homosexuality for it and porno for it. There's some people that blame that on that, too. Mm. And I just don't think it doesn't work that way.
Mm.
I would like to thank you, Angela, for being on the show.
Well, I want to thank you, Marty, for having me on the show. I really, really appreciate it. It was a good time.
Yes, it is. And at least it's a better show.
Oh, it's from the last experience. It's a great, great show. I thank you so much.
You're welcome. And for the closing, we'll play Amazing Grace.
And could we just say where folks can possibly...
Yes, let's do that.
Is that okay?
Yes.
You can go to my website, www.angelafischetti.com, or you can go to www.cdbaby.com, or towerrecords.com, or judygarlandmuseum.org. So it's a few places.
Okay. And I'd like to thank you all for listening. Let me see where Amazing Grace is at.
Amazing Grace is number 7.
Okay.
After a track that's called Yoga's Chitta Vritti Nirodha. It's after that, it's called Amazing Grace.
Okay.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was great.